We're actually going to go back to Hollywood, Florida with Atif Hussain's group to talk about a patient who has mantle cell. And Dr. Nagovsky actually has this patient, is going to present in a second. 62-year-old man presents just this past April with abdominal pain and CT evidence of portal and iliac lymphadenopathy. And the biopsy shows highly proliferative mantle cell with IGVHCCND1 gene rearrangement, suggesting aggressive disease. So Dr. Nagovsky, can you bring us up to date on what happened to this patient?
Right. So it was decided on tumor board to treat this patient off-label, giving rituximab hypercvad with bortezomib. Patient received 4 cycles, and after the first cycle felt much better. He was restaged after 4 cycles and eventually was referred for transplant evaluation.
And where is he right now?
He came back after his transplant that was done a couple of months ago, feels great and recovering well. We haven't restaged him yet.
And just to clarify, because this is kind of a controversial situation here where bortezomib was used up front. This was outside of a trial, is that correct?
Correct. That's outside of the trial.
So in a second, I'll see if any of the 3 oncologists there want to ask the faculty any questions. But Mitch, just to start out, and we'll get the faculty's opinion also, how much of a difference does it make to you if the patient's presenting with, quote, aggressive mantle cell? And what do you think about the possibility of using bortezomib up front outside of a trial as was done here?
Yeah, so certainly there are patients, and I'll show some slides looking at some patients you can watch and wait, but clearly this is not that patient. So aggressive disease requires treatment. We're out of that debate. Ki-67, proliferative fraction, really is one of the most important markers for outcome. So, you know, I think that's clear. The blastoid variant is one that people talk about. It's a little hard to reproduce. It's really not that common. That may actually be one that's potentially curable based on some small numbers that came out of the MD Anderson data. But this didn't look to me like blastoid variant, although it's hard to see. But clearly it's a very aggressive, high Ki-67 disease, and that does warrant more aggressive treatment.
So, Stephanie, what we see in our patterns of care study in terms of mantle cell is actually more hyper-CVAD in the community and more R-CHOP transplant in tertiary centers, not much in terms of what was done here. What are your thoughts about this?
So there's no question that I would move ahead with transplant and I would use an R chemotherapy. And whether it's R hypercvad or R CHOP, I have been using more R CHOP lately because I really have difficulty with the R hypercvad. And I don't use that, obviously, in patients over the age of 65.
Can I just ask one thing? When you say R hypercvad for 4 cycles, do you mean R hypercvad alternating with methotrexate cytarabine, ABAB, or do you mean the modified R hypercvad? You're talking about the modified?
No, just it's standard hypercvad.
With the methotrexate ARA-C alternate, okay. And the bortezomib was just with the Part A, or how did you devise that?
It was given at 1.5 milligrams per meter squared at day 8 and 15 on off weeks.
What do you think about that, Mitch?
Bold. I think we have to be careful adding bortezomib into regimens. It's a very interesting idea. There's a lot of studies looking at it. Jonathan's had some experience with combinations. There's R bortezomib CHOP out there. I'll show you some data from ECOG. But there's clearly some risks of neurotoxicity and other things, and we don't really know how to incorporate it. So it's a little bit of a risk doing things that you're not really, you know, there's really no data on that schedule to tell you.
Jonathan, and CME, we're always sort of skating on the edge, but the oncologists are out there, they're seeing data, they're trying to come up with the best decision for their patients sitting in front of them. Really hard situation. What do you think about what was done here?
I think you have to think what you're trying to accomplish. And I agree with Stephanie. If the goal is to get the patient into a good remission followed by high-dose chemotherapy, I'm not sure it's clear right now that you really need to add bortezomib. I mean, the response rates to the hyper-CVAD regimen are very, very high. So if you were planning to try to prolong the response without an autologous transplant, then I can appreciate why somebody would do that. And as Mitch said, all the cooperative groups for a period of time were adding bortezomib carefully in the context of a clinical trial in upfront therapy for mantle cell lymphoma. Whether or not that's going to have any impact remains to be seen. And I think that given the risk in somebody who you are hoping to get to transplant of causing a problem that would prevent you from getting there, in my mind, I think it's probably not something we should encourage.
So, Atif, any questions you want to pose before Mitch goes through the data? Atif?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to know actually how do we differentiate between the majority of patients with mantle cell who will need immediate treatment and those who do not, and what's on the horizon regarding consolidation for those who require immediate treatment?
Myron?
I think it's a clinical judgment and also the patient with respect to the degree of, say, adenopathy, disease, and if they're symptomatic with B symptoms, et cetera. If they have a small volume disease that's slowly progressive, John Lennon has published from Cornell that those patients can be monitored perhaps for several months. It's not the case with this patient with a high Ki-67. I just want to make one point before Mitch goes on also that I look at the age of the patient. This patient's 62, and it's around the cusp that there's data from MD Anderson with the rituximab hypercevad as given here that patients at 65, and I saw also data at the 60 to 65 range, they actually don't do as well as those patients less than 60. In fact, if we look at the curves that they've upgraded last year, year before at ASH, those patients don't necessarily do any better. In fact, they do maybe not as good as R-CHOP. So I would prefer doing what Stephanie and John said. I would rather probably given this patient less toxicity with the induction therapy, with an R-CHOP type of upfront induction, followed by an autologous stem cell transplant, only because our hypercevad in the 65 range really isn't that impressive.
So, Dr. Nagovsky, how did this patient actually do in terms of the induction? Did you need hospitalization, or how did you do?
Well, he received inpatient induction each cycle, and he was prophylaxed with G-CSF, also received lamivudine prophylactic because he was tested positive for hepatitis B infection. He did well, required some blood transfusions, platelet transfusions, and when came back from transplant, had mild neuropathy only as a presenting symptom.
So one more question before Mitch begins. Matthias, what about maintenance in mantle cell in your trial?
So one would assume that mantle cell is a lymphoma entity with a bad prognosis, therefore one immediately has the thought to add rituximab maintenance. However, I am not sure if this makes any sense, and there's no data. We in Germany first addressed this question of a randomized trial, rituximab maintenance added to chemotherapy without rituximab maintenance. So far, I would not think this is a solution to the problem.
Mitch, so here's this patient. We asked the audience pretty much, you see a fair amount of heterogeneity in what people would do. The most common answer in this audience was R hypercevad in transplant. We didn't ask about R maintenance to the audience. Mitch, how do you approach outside a protocol setting R maintenance?
Yeah, the slide I showed about R-CHOP versus CHOP shows you that rituximab in mantle cell lymphoma is not the magic drug it is in follicular lymphoma. So it's not as great. Has some benefit. Meta-analysis shows some benefit. So I think the rituximab maintenance question is really open, especially if you get intensive therapy with transplant. There's no data there. If you're doing less intensive, you have an older patient, you think, gee, maybe when it relapses it'll be difficult, then you could maybe think about doing it. But it doesn't have the benefit, at least the data don't show yet, the kind of benefit we expect as in follicular lymphoma.
So Matthias, before you said you predicted the results of the PRIMA study. You want to predict the results of your study in mantle cell with maintenance?
Yes, so we're randomizing in the elderly patient population the question of rituximab maintenance, BR plus observation against BR plus rituximab maintenance. And up to my opinion, this is a totally open question. We have to wait. Outside of a clinical trial, I would not add rituximab maintenance.
Okay, we'll just go back to the tumor board again. Any questions you'd like to address to the faculty before we go on to the last case?
No, I mean, since rituximab is not the magical drug for this disease, is there any investigation using any other targeted therapies for mantle cell?
Stephanie?
So I think we should mention, thank you, Latif, for talking about that, but we should mention that there certainly is a patient who's not eligible for transplant and has a nice response, say, to an R-CHOP or even an FC regimen. They are candidates for a lenalidomide maintenance after their induction therapy, if they have a CR or a PR. So there are trials addressing other agents as a maintenance. It would be a maintenance after their induction therapy.
Would you use that strategy outside of protocol settings?
Absolutely not.
Great.